Pounders, this is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 12 of the Superfluous Poppycock Podcast. I've got my good buddy Seth Warren here with me, and we have so much to talk about. I took no notes. We're going to dive in here, starting with, I'm holding us to no more than 5 minutes to talk about the NBA Finals and give the props to LeBron before we move off and talk about Spurs and offseason and draft and free agency and people opting out. And I already took 30 seconds, so.
All I need is four, so we're going to be just fine as long as I don't take a breath. What do you say? I mean, it's over. It was a phenomenal finals to watch. Mm-hmm. I, along with 99%, I think, of the rest of Americans and the rest of basketball fans worldwide, nearly 100% of Las Vegas, Nevada, mind you, picked Golden State, and I'm still shocked that they collapsed. They absolutely choked and collapsed, and it was two straight series. You had one series in which they allow themselves to go down 3-1, and then the following series in the finals, they allow themselves to give a 3-point or 3-1 lead away. So it was just a disastrous collapse all the way around. I mean, I found myself wondering quickly and asking the question, is this year's Golden State collapse better or worse than the 18-1 New England Patriots collapse? Because that's equally of disastrous of a collapse, depending on where you side on things. But the moral of the story of all of this, to summarize the finals, I have railed on LeBron. I don't think highly of him as an individual, as a player, as a brand. None of it. I railed on the city of Cleveland. It's not one of my favorite cities. Mea culpa for all of that. Props to LeBron. Got to take my hat off. Got to send a clap out to LeBron, because what he did in this finals, there's not much you can really argue. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to be Stephen A. Smith and coronate.
Please don't. Please never do that.
He's not the savior of mankind or even the greatest player to ever play the game just because of this win. He's still, what, 3 out of 6 in the finals? Which is not bad, but sticking with this sample size, to lead in every statistical category, to play with that team on his back, and to beat, you know, what most were coronating as the greatest team of all time in Golden State, you just have to give props to LeBron James. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I love watching an ultimate game. I love the seventh game of a seven game series. I think it's terrific. But they're usually not very well played games. Usually the field goal percentage is so low, and it's this deal where everybody feels the pressure, and it's usually very like defensive contest. And man, there was a lot of good basketball. And then with four and a half minutes left in the fourth, everybody stopped scoring, and it really felt like the next team that would score would win. And that's exactly what happened, because Kyrie Irving absolutely took the game by the horns. He did what nobody else could do, and in the almost the last half of the fourth quarter, he made a basket, and yeah. with every single miss, it had to get more and more, just absolutely sphincter tightening. Everybody dealing with the pressure that this game was on the line, it was there for the taking, and both defenses played incredible. LeBron's dunk, just insane.
The block on Iguodala. I mean, there was so much. And you're right, Kyrie stepped up. Well, he needed to. I mean, there's a reason we don't talk about Kyrie in the top 3 point guards in the league conversation, and it's because of a lot of inconsistency that he's had. So I even said after the 41-point game, he's not going to be a threat anymore. He'll give you that 40-point game every series. He's done it to us. He's done it to other teams, but he won't give you any more. And
he did.
Sure enough, he did this series.
He came through.
I found myself thinking at the end of this as well, not only is this collapse worse than the Patriots collapse, but
I think it is.
I actually do too. I mean, they were so hyped up, and especially, you know, with football, you're one play away. You're one play away from a collapse. With basketball, this was a brooding collapse. This collapse, this was stretched out for a couple of rounds here. The other question that I just can't escape in this series is the media is spinning this as, oh, this is cemented LeBron James legacy. This is cemented, you know, he is this, he is that. I think this series did more to affect negatively the legacy of Steph Curry than it did positively the legacy of LeBron James.
Man, time will tell. All right, that's our 5 minutes on the finals.
Done.
Whew. We can set that aside. Tell me. We've got some really cool news about Manu Ginobili.
Ooh, well, it depends
opting
on what you
out
yeah.
of his contract, and in the same breath, well, you know, it's all sources.
Right.
But
right.
In the same moment, we hear that he's leaning towards coming back. That really seems like he might be willing to hang back. Wait, let the Spurs renounce their rights to him, sign him back at whatever they have left after they do all their free agent canoodling, which could potentially mean the veteran's minimum. What do you think about
right.
that?
I think there's a couple ways to read it. A lot of people panicked when he announced this, but here's the way you boil it down. He announced this because he's a Spur through and through, and as soon as he announced it, it just made me so happy because, guys, what he is doing is he's pulling out of his current deal to allow the Spurs more flexibility, i.e., he knows something. Possibly, we're going to try to make a splash. We're going to go all in. We're going to push. There's been a lot of speculation that the Spurs are going to try to rebuild through the draft, that they're, you know, really going to cultivate a lot of talent in the system, that they're not going to go after a big name until next year, maybe Durant, after he re-ups this summer with Oklahoma City, something like that. I think, and I tend to kind of side on the speculative side of he understands that they're, to me, at least by him opting out, it was confirmation. And again, this is just my opinion, confirmation that the Spurs are all in. They're going to go and they're going to try to make a move. Now, by him opting out, it also gives him the freedom to say, okay, we tried, we failed. We didn't make several big splashes, several big moves we needed. I'll re-sign at a minimum at that point. So this doesn't mean you see the headline Manu opts out. This is nowhere near like Dirk opting out, which we'll talk about later in the podcast. I think this is nothing but helpful to the organization and and the progress of the team. And I think, you know, I don't know where you stand on this either, JR, but I think, again, and it's so hard for me to even say this because this may just be my hopeful optimism. I think this speaks to Timmy coming back as well, because I don't believe Manu would have opted. I don't see Manu opting out now, kind of leave that dangling out there, and then announce a retirement in a month or so. I don't see that.
If he was going to retire, I think he would retire. I think if he knew that he was going to retire, he would retire. Who knows? Something could happen in the Olympics.
Right.
Yeah, and he might come back at the end of that and go, hey, I'm done. You know, that's it. That's a good way to end my career. I don't expect that. That everything that he does here is setting up for him to come back, especially with the murmurs and the rumblings and the sources saying that he's willing to come back. No, what this feels like to me is last year when all the dominoes started falling and there was one way, like maybe one and one A, but it was very, very constricted salary cap situation that the Spurs had to sign everybody in just the right order in order to get everybody that they wanted and LaMarcus, and then fit all the other pieces around them. And because not just of the salary cap number, but also because of the order, and this guy can't be signed because it would be this much, but now you can sign him and go over to the cap because you've already signed this guy. All of those dominoes just fell perfectly. It's like that San Antonio set them up and then they knocked them all down. And this feels like the first clink, kink, where you can hear the domino being set down on the table. It's like, oh, wait, hold on. This is
eerily similar to last year.
It's just got my off-season juices flowing here.
Well, I can tell you, the way he announced, I mean, and that was the other thing I heard in that is the odds of Timmy coming back just skyrocketed. Because I also don't see, in the same vein that I don't see Manu announcing he's going to opt out, then retiring at a later date, I don't see Manu doing all of this and leaving open that speculation, likely that he's coming back without having a conversation with Timmy. Because I actually see at this point in their career, I see both of them together as a pairing. I think when one walks, the other walks. I don't think they walk separate from each other. So, and that's, again, just my opinion, just my speculation, but it seems to me that kind of is how things are lining up. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I would tell her, what does Timmy have till the 29th?
Yes.
I would say we all need to expect an announcement on the 29th. Tim Duncan is opting out of his deal. And I think once that happens, we'll know with pretty strong certainty that A, the Spurs are going all in. We're lining up dominoes, like JR said. We've got a plan. We're playing chess. Everybody else is playing hopscotch. We're going to make this thing happen. And then we're going to re-sign these guys for a minimum later, which is a whole other podcast to talk about. How many times have either one of these guys taken a bullet for this team and said, I believe in the organization, vet minimum? Yeah, I mean, this is it's almost embarrassing, and I just almost feel bad. I don't want to sound arrogant, but I just feel bad because you've got, you know, things going on in other cities within our state, and you have what's going on in San Antonio. Guys are going, no, I love the game. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it later on. I mean, it's just nuts. We are so blessed as a fan base, and we don't even realize it.
Yes. Well, we remind ourselves continually that how spoiled we are. And for me, it's not that we have the spoiled brat syndrome, but it really does spoil us for listening to the tales that, like, a lot of the other fan bases have to deal with. And I don't take that in any kind of elitist type way. It's not me. I'm not the one making those decisions. I'm not the one that's so awesome. It's just like a lot of fan bases have to deal with a lot of really stinky decisions and from their front offices. And we just don't have to deal with that.
No. And I don't think anyone is consciously just not appreciating what we have. I think what it is it's almost like you do with your children. You tend to look the next step. You look so much further into the future that you don't appreciate the now all the time and live in the moment. You know, I get in this argument all the time with my wife about put your stupid camera down and let's enjoy what you're taking pictures of, and then we'll deal with the memory and all that kind of stuff later. Let's live in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think we're guilty as a fan base of not necessarily living and resting in the moment of having what we have, but going, okay, 2016, 2017. Who are we going to draft? What are we going to do in the free agent? And we just don't rest in that moment. So maybe it's not a lack of appreciation as much as it is a lack of just peacefulness and foresight.
Well, you know, we deal so often, not so often, but we've been dealing so long with, is this Tim's last year? Is this Manu's last year? Are they going to keep on playing? That to be at the cusp of this and have Manu say, I'm leaning on coming back and going, I get one more year of watching Manu shoot free throws. I get to watch his three-point shot for one more year. See the way that the ball comes off his fingers for one more season. Get 82, hopefully as many as 82 more games of watching him dribble around.
I hope not.
What?
Well, I hope not. Yeah. Oh, I think you maximize Timmy and Manu. You and I had this conversation privately. You play him 40 games apiece, and that's it.
Yeah,
but treat him like Shaquille, and you leave him at home for away games.
No matter how many games we get, but to get, you know, 8 more months of that, you know, pure joy at this point. And so not have to think about one of them at this point looming over our heads. Still could happen, absolutely. But the fact that he's leaning towards coming back, Manu was the one I was most worried about. I felt like Tim was 60, maybe 65% coming back through the season, and then the way that he walked off the court, and we talked about the finger that he raised and how hard he played in Oklahoma City, how many minutes he played at the end. Was that, hey, let me just go ahead and blow everything I've got for this season, or whether he was saying goodbye to the game, we still don't know. And after that game six, I felt a little bit more tentative about wanting to call him coming back. But now with Manu, I love hearing you say that you see them both going out together, that you don't think that Tim will leave when he knows that Manu's coming back.
A couple of years ago, I did not think that. I Manu was looking a little rusty at various different times, and I was certain Manu was done. Timmy, you better come back because you got a few more good years in you. But I was positive. And these guys, it's almost like both of their trajectories or their careers have almost been this bar graph, this line on a graph that is gradually convening towards each other, in which now to me, they're seemingly parallel. You don't have one player who, well, you know, Timmy could probably go, but gosh, Manu should stay. Both of them right now, I'm begging both to come back. Both can be useful if played correctly, if managed correctly, if things like that. And I see them both because they've paralleled themselves and because, at least in my mind, they have synced up in that regard of their career trajectory. I don't see one of them breaking away without the other one. I would be stunned if Manu made this announcement and then next week we get an announcement from Timmy saying, no, I'm done. And I think Manu would be stunned. I can't envision what I know of Manu, him being willing to come back and be part of the big three with only two. I just can't quite see that happening. The question is, what's Tony going to do? I mean, how is Tony going to coexist as the only surviving member of the big three at that point? But that's a conversation for next summer.
Well, yeah, and that's a conversation that Tony's been having with himself for years and years. He knew that he would be around longer than those guys and how young he was. Right. And remember before he turned 30 and Pop was going to take him out of the game? And he's like, Pop, I'm 29 years old. I've only played 29 minutes. He's like, get back in there, right? That was when he knew he was the alpha dog of the big three, and he was carrying the team. And so that's like 4 years ago now, right? And so we've got the situation where he's not that player. He knows the team's going to be riding Aldridge and Leonard, and he's come out and said this offseason, I know my role's changed. I'm okay with that. He's been the low guy on the totem pole of the big three, and now the entire big three is taking, you know, Delta dog status, right? I mean
technically you'd go Bravo, but yeah, if you want to go Delta, I guess that's fine.
Alpha Bravo Charlie dog, that sounds funny. Sounds like a stuffed animal, but you know, I mean, at this point, you know, it's, you know, the three of them are supplemental to Kawhi and LaMarcus. Yeah. And that's just the way it is, and they get it, and it's all right.
Right, and they welcome and embrace it. Well, what do you see the Spurs doing in the draft then? I mean, obviously we've got free agent talk that we can have, and we can speculate, and we can dream, and we can hope. The draft is really where you got some concrete names that are concrete possibilities. What do you see coming out in the next couple of weeks?
Well, Eli Horowitz is in New York, writer for PTR, one of my guys that I work with on the Spurs playbook series and breaking down plays and describing them. He's a high school varsity basketball coach that's going to go to journalism school starting in the fall. And he is on site. He's going to be at the draft tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
All right. Going to be after draft on Thursday. And he got to go to the Wednesday's media availability, talk to a lot of the lottery picks, essentially, and was surprised how many of them said things about the Spurs. And
having talked to the Spurs
and having, you know, had conversations with and working out for them. And maybe it was more than just the top 13, maybe it was the top 18 guys that were there. And he just talked about on the phone afterwards. He just said, I'm surprised at how many of them have had interactions with the Spurs, which is interesting, either, you know, throwing people off the scent or being ready for any eventuality. So, but I mean, the way he walked away thinking, man, the Spurs are going to look for a shooter. The Spurs are looking for a shooting guard here, and seeing what they can get in the top, something in the top 20 picks.
Well, virtually all sources that I've seen, incredible sources, are all corroborating that the Spurs are actively trying to trade up in the draft. So clearly they've got their eye on somebody or several somebodies, and we're trying to steal them away. And it's stuff that you hear, it seems like, every year, especially with the Spurs. Like you said, there's a lot of throwing off of the scent. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of running around, and we all get really excited, and absolutely nothing happens as we draft some kid out of Herzegnova, and we never hear from him again. But this year, it seems, like you said, it seems to be a little bit more, there just seems to be a little bit more fire behind these rumors and the source reports and things like that, as though it's a far more likely possibility.
Yeah, and I'm completely ready for that. Even though that's possible that could mean saying goodbye to Danny Green,
It's funny that you go straight to Danny, though. Why do you go straight to Danny? Why is he specifically often the first and only target?
It feels like another George Hill thing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
And it feels like 2011 again. It feels like five years ago. It feel and how weird again with George Hill being traded on Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, to in that three-way deal between Utah and Indiana and the Hawks, is that right?
I believe it was the Hawks because Indiana picked up, I think, Jeff Teague.
Yeah, that's who
Utah
it was,
picked up, right? George Hill. It was I mean, you talk about a sad piece of news to hear. And he, you know, who knows? But he had such a good gig there at home in Indiana, and to be traded out to, you know, quite a ways away, almost a wasteland from what he's accustomed to, is too bad for him because we all still like George, and he's one of those former Spurs that I think most all of us keep up with and wish the best for.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm just it but it feels like the same kind of thing when looking at this draft. And yeah, look, if the Spurs put Danny on the block, there's no doubt that teams are going to chomp at that bit.
Absolutely.
And if that's, I mean, like George Hill at that point, I mean, he was a good player, but we had no idea we were going to be able to flip him for anything, even halfway as good as what we have in Kawhi this year. And it just seems like Patty Mills wouldn't be enough to turn heads and get to move up the way that the Spurs want to.
Yeah.
Apparently want to, if reports and rumors and scuttlebutt is worth anything. But at this point, it's one of those.
It's all scuttlebutt.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, too, you didn't say about potentially trading Danny, I don't foresee the organization would even consider something like that without a very strong confidence in someone in the draft, a la Kawhi Leonard. I mean, it's a similar move, and you talked about, you know, you touched on the similarity there. Well, you remember how devastating it was because we knew what we had in George Hill.
Yeah.
How dare you guys? Why would you get rid of this guy? I mean, maybe it's a money thing. Maybe it's, well, they saw something in Kawhi that virtually no one else saw and just seized on that. So the fact that those same guys see something else potentially in the draft that they could be willing to part with
In a draft that everybody's saying is weak, is two players, and then maybe just like the big – yeah, I know. It's exciting, isn't it?
Well, and especially so because it's Danny. Because I would even put Danny in a different category than I would George Hill because, you know, George Hill in a lot of ways was fairly expendable to us. Mm-hmm. Danny is not.
I know.
A dynamite wing shooter who can defend and who knows our system and is a corporate guy. I mean, for them to consider potentially – and, of course, we don't know that for a fact. You and I are speculating, Danny. But if we lose Danny in place of somebody, you guys hold on to your butts because that somebody is very likely to be a head turner.
Yeah, and at this point, I really hope they don't. I mean, I love Danny. I think he's fantastic. It's not the situation we had with Georgie where, you know, our best five players couldn't play together because he's either going to play the one or the two, and we had Tony and Manu there, and that just didn't work.
Right.
And so at this point, we don't have that with Danny. And so I really hope that we're able to keep him. And if the Spurs move up, they're able to swing some other thing in order to do that. But at this point, you know, again, all scuttlebutt and speculation. So,
well, I would certainly rather be having this conversation than if we were in the city of Dallas and the conversation we'd be having today.
Oh, I know. You wanna gloat here, right?
No. We're simply delivering news about one of our greatest in-state rivals, or at least an in-state team that aspires to be one of our greatest rivals. We're simply delivering news on that team.
Okay, why don't you deliver some news?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, the Dallas Mavericks are kind of having a fire sale. Kind of real sad what's going on. The emperor, you know, the kingdom of Cuban, the emperor Cuban, his entire kingdom seems to be coming unraveled. And it's really heart-wrenching to see. Apparently, you know, in a nutshell, Dirk opted out, which in a vacuum wouldn't mean much. We've got some guys doing that. However, so did Deron Williams and Chandler Parsons. Now, Dirk, according to sources, wants Parsons to take a massive pay cut because he doesn't want to be a part of a rebuild. He wants to bring in some free agents. Does this sound familiar? Bringing in some big names and everybody taking a pay cut so that people can come to Dallas, because Dallas obviously is a huge free agent destination, as we've seen. Parsons wants max money and has outed so that he can re-up and get that money.
Has he played well enough to get that money, though?
He's been injured, and that's the argument you have. I don't know that you'll get max, but he, with a good agent, could theoretically get near max. And if you're Dallas, can you afford to let a guy like that with that kind of skill go anyway? But Dirk has also privately told sources that he wants to leave if Parsons gets the max. Now, what I just said, let me repeat that. Dirk Nowitzki has said that he's going to leave if Chandler Parsons gets a big deal. Dirk Nowitzki. And that would be, I mean, I'm not even going to say what it would be like to us, because that would be an insult to our guys that I use in the analogy. But it's kind of a big deal if a franchise cornerstone like Dirk threatens to leave. And I told a Mavs buddy of mine today, I'm kind of excited to watch Dirk Nowitzki retire a Laker.
You're friends with a Mavs fan?
Well, I think it's important to keep guys like that in your life, just to keep you grounded. Okay. It goes back to the appreciation we talked about.
All right.
So, yeah, they've got all kinds of disaster going on in Dallas. There have been rumors that Dwight Howard is looking at Dallas, but it sounds like he could be going to a franchise that has literally no one else in it. So it's going to be interesting to see what one of our division rivals, what comes out of one of our division rivals here in the next couple of weeks, for sure.
Man, I can't imagine a league where Dirk is playing somewhere besides Dallas.
Right. Well, there's no D in the word Laker either, so he would be perfect if he went to L.A.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, you want to pick fights with anybody else today?
Zing. Well, Derrick Rose was traded this week to the Knicks. Go Phil Jackson!
Goodness.
That's going to be fun for 7-8 games at least.
I look at that deal, and the first thing that comes to mind is Chicago wins that trade.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know who they got, and I can tell you Chicago won that trade.
Oh.
I'm not even sure what happened in response. Chicago is kind of shaping up, too, to be an interesting player because, you know, Powell has talked about leaving. Mm-hmm. Nova has talked about leaving, and now they've bounced Rose. I mean, it's, you know, they've talked about floating Butler. I guess they're in full-on rebuild project at this point. But they're gradually gutting everybody they've got, too. And, of course, Golden State is back on the radar in the free agent market. They've got a lot of not necessarily big-name free agents, but, you know, Bogut, Barnes, Barbosa. I mean, they've got – they could make a splash. Your favorite owner made some comments that that they're going to be active. So I think it's going to be a fun summer.
Yeah. Wow. Well, New York sends Robin Lopez, Jose Calderon, and Grant to Chicago.
Grant? Who Grant?
Jerry and Grant.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And Chicago sends Derrick Rose and Justin Holiday, and a second round pick, next year's second round pick, to the Knicks.
Wow.
But that's just, I mean,
I like Lopez, though. I really do like
him. I like him a lot.
Robin Lopez. I think that's, I stand by it. I think Chicago got the better end of that deal.
I just don't see Rose and Carmelo. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, that would be great. It would be fantastic if the Knicks were relevant again, just to bring any kind of additional intrigue to the East. But I see this and I'm meh. I don't.
No, you don't. Well, you don't see it. I'll tell you why. Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony are both players that require the ball. They have to have the ball to impact the game in every facet. And Rose, with his injury issues and things like that, you just I don't know. It's going to be interesting how those guys fit. And my first thought is poor Porzingis. Because he's got such a natural talent. You'd love to see him succeed. And that's slowly becoming a dumpster fire in New York, because I don't see Derrick Rose really fitting into the triangle that well next to Carmelo.
Wow! So you've got Carmelo, you got Porzingis, and you've got Derrick Rose,
yes.
And that
who else? That's
be
pretty much it.
Well, you know, you've got Justin Holliday as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now you've got Justin Holliday. You're right.
So,
and a second rounder.
That does not – I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, like, all those guys have crazy good talent. Can they mesh it? It's an interesting topic, but we'll have to see. That there's months before we even get to see them take the floor together.
It's just fun to watch all of this, and even if it is nothing but speculation, just to see all that's coming down so far. It seems like this summer is more active, at least from maybe just
pre-draft,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, there's so much more going on. I think I don't know if it's desperation or if it's guys going, look, we got to keep pace with, you know, the thriving West, or at least that's what we thought last week.
It's one domino, I think, because everybody was holding their breath leading up to the last draft. And, like, there was one tiny little thing that dropped right before the draft, but, like, nothing like this. And here the day before the draft, you've got all these pieces moving. So,
well, I can tell you, as a Spurs fan, and I don't know if you share this, I'd love to hear your feedback on this, but I am literally completely content with one of two directions. If the Spurs, well, one of two directions being 1A and B and then 2, 1A, I am completely okay with the Spurs going all in and trying to make, you know, they've got some kind of a plan, whether it's some big name or some guy we've never heard of or, you know, some kind of domino arrangement of us playing chess. I'm okay with that, and I trust those guys, and I'm excited to see what kind of, you know, big name, riveting type of thing we do. 1B, we try that, it fails. You know, we bring in some moderate guys and maybe build through the draft. That's fine too. Or 2, I'm okay if we just cultivate what we have in our system, try to draft well, and cultivate our D-League guys, the guys that we have overseas. I mean, I guess splash or no splash, I'm really happy going into this free agency period.
Mm.
I don't feel like a lot needs to be done, really.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of pieces that would improve the Spurs.
Sure.
And seeing which ones the Spurs are able to target and have a chance to bring in is what's so intriguing about this series, about this part of the season. And honestly, it's the weirdest thing. I used to not pay attention to the summer, used to completely take a nap on the entire offseason. I was like, let me know who they wind up with when it's all over, and I'll look at the team in the preseason a game or two, but it doesn't make any difference until they're in silver and black. But now this is one of those times of year that they kind of makes it all happen, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it is definitely that. I don't, you know, we've seen a lot of talk about draftees, a lot of talk about bringing guys in that we've stashed overseas. I don't ever recall being so minimally paranoid or so minimally stressed.
you're looking over your shoulder, wondering where your shoulder devil is, huh?
I am. I'm looking around, going, why am I not more panicked? Why am I not more enraged and more forceful about, no, you guys have to do this, go after this guy, go bring this guy in. You know, I'm kind of just laying back eating popcorn at this point, going, you know, we got this, we'll be okay. I mean, even if it's a rebuilding year, I'm comfortable with that, because the foundation that we've got is a great foundation.
Your subconscious is subdued after last year's acquisition of Aldridge, and you don't feel like they're going to waste a year of Tim and Manu if they're not able to bring somebody in to make sure that they're at the top of the contenders list. That's probably.
I think that's a lot of it. But I think when you knock down a free agent like last summer in LaMarcus Aldridge, there's not much that. I mean, I feel like if you sent me a text next week and said we just got Kevin Durant, I'd kind of go, oh, that's awesome. You know, I mean, I'm thrilled with that.
I'm not stunned.
That's what I'm saying.
No, you would not be stunned. Okay.
No, I would be stunned, because the LaMarcus took the edge off of that. I'm just kind of like, you know, that was such a coup and such an acquisition, such a, you know, a franchise defining move in a lot of ways to make that big of a splash, that, you know, how do you I just don't know how do you touch that. And you've also earned so much latitude of trust once you do that that at this point I'm going, okay, you bring some guy in from Scandinavia, that's fine. He's probably good. You don't bring the guy in, that's fine. You trust what we have.
You know, Scandinavia is not a country, right?
Oh, sure. Okay. It's you can bring a guy in from an entire region. If it's another guy like Boban, technically he's from a region because he spans several zip codes.
Well, when he's lying down to sleep, for sure.
Yes.
So, before we hit superfluous poppycock, do you have anything?
You know, I don't know if this would be superfluous poppycock or not, but this is a dramatic change of subject. Let me just tell you right now, greatest Father's Day present in the world. Mm. My wife said, you know what, I'm going to take the kids and go see my sister for a week. I'm going to go on vacation.
Left you alone.
Oh, thank you, Jesus. It has been the greatest week in existence. That my house, do you hear
no.
in my office, do you hear that?
I hear nothing.
That's dead silence.
I hear the pitter-patter of nothing right
that's
now.
That's it. That is, and it has been the greatest week. So I've been catching up on movies, and I've watched several new releases, and I couldn't wait to tell you. Zoolander 2, I don't know, were you a fan of the original Zoolander?
It was funny. It was fun to quote. I don't know if it was as fun to watch as it is to quote, but...
Okay. Zoolander 2, complete and utter garbage juice.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot, and the saddest thing is I can't even get it out of my head. I need to just vomit what I saw for two hours, and I had to finish it because it's almost like, you know, I just can't look away. This is so
bad.
Yes,
that's the way I was with Anchorman, which, again, is fun to quote, but you just sit there and you go, okay, I'm going to push through. I'm going to finish this out. I don't know.
You mean Anchorman 2, right? You don't mean Anchorman 1.
The Anchorman 1, the third act of Anchorman 1, for me, I was just like waiting for it to be over. I'm like, hopefully there was some funny stuff in it, but all of the stuff and kicking the dog and all that. I mean, just like it was so far beyond anything that I was enjoying or could even believe. It's funny.
Anchorman 2 was an abomination, but Anchorman 1 was an epic American classic. And I couldn't disagree more with you there. But just trust me when I say Zoolander 2, everyone who's listening to me, if you've seen Zoolander 2, I apologize.
Why would you even?
It was out. You know, thank goodness I went to Redbox and I didn't pay, you know, on demand or something like that. I'm only out $1.50. But it was an absolute disaster in every way. Nothing about it was good.
I'll tell you that Mrs. Wilco and I are full three seasons into Suits now, and it is getting better and better. Still enjoying that so much. So
I'll start it. Even though you're the man who just told me Anchorman was overrated, I will start Suits for you.
Go for it. Go for it. You have to watch Suits. So the poppycock I have, I've got to talk about the comeuppance. And if there's
which comeuppance for Draymond?
I feel like Draymond got his comeuppance when he was finally suspended, when the league finally said, you know what, we're just not going to let you go out there and endanger the other players' ability to reproduce anymore.
Right.
We're gonna draw a line in the sand here and say, you know, three times in seven games, we're not okay with that.
That's right.
You know, and so, no, I feel like he got that already. And of course, his first game back, he didn't play great. He played fantastic in game seven. No, this is all about the Warriors owner that you mentioned before. And the interview that he gave in March or in the early part of the year, just patting himself on the back and just giving himself all of the credit for owning the team and how perfectly they were being run and how light years they were ahead of everyone else. And just for him not to be able to soak in the glory of another championship is just that I don't root against teams or people very often, but he was definitely at the top of my list. And I got to say, the fact that he dropped that in the middle of the season and that people can sit there and put a check mark in the box to a little instant karma there for him, that does me for my superfluous poppycock this week. How about you?
I'll jump on that. I didn't see really a lot of superfluous poppycock. I didn't see anything I didn't really disagree. I mean, I was so dumbfounded after the finals just that these 73-win Warriors actually lost, and they actually did it dropping a 3-1 lead. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, I found myself rooting for Cleveland.
Yeah.
It was after game six that I went, you know what? Screw these guys. I'm done with this. 73 wins. You guys talk and you have this air of humility. It's a facade. It's a joke. We all see through that because Draymond can't contain himself. And you got this owner that's a tool. I mean, I literally just found myself turning and going, you know what? I want to see Cleveland get a ring. I want to see LeBron get, silence all the haters, even though I'm one of the haters. I
want to see LeBron silence me. Right.
Exactly.
Now.
So I really didn't. And I thought they handled it fairly well. I mean, I think they were a little dumbfounded, so they didn't really have the opportunity to put their foot in their mouth. But I don't. Yeah, I think you're poppycock. Far succeeds anything I could come up with.
All right. Well, that works. And we have another one in the can. So that'll do it for this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.